Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Since voting is a right, why would we as a state attempt to reduce the right of a person to exercise their right to vote and in the manner in which they decide to vote? We may not have to take a test, count bubbles or marbles or any other such nonsense, but this bill is tantamount the same thing.
Senator Audrey Gibson yesterday during debate on the Senate floor about the House, about the bill relating to election reforms. The House is working on their version. The Senate has just passed their version. And it's really interesting to listen to because it's a good example of posturing. And to some degree, posturing on both sides. I think more so posturing on the Democrat side, but of course I have my own bias in the sense that I think that the Democrats are wrong on a lot of this stuff. But what she's getting at is the old rules that were put in place to make it harder or, in practice, impossible for black people to vote, especially in the South. You know, hey, how many bubbles you see there? No, you can't vote. You know, these kind of tests that were applied to people. How many jelly beans? How many marbles? Nah, I mean, not jelly, but, you know, that was the kind of stuff that was really done in order to disenfranchise black people in the past. And so what they're doing is bringing up those kind of extreme examples, which we all condemn, and saying, well, this is either just like that, or this hints at that, or this is the slippery slope to going back to that. Those are three different ways of looking at it, all negative, right? To say this is the same as that, well, you know, if you have to ask for a new absentee ballot every 2 years instead of you can ask for it two elections in advance, to say that's the same as telling black people they can't vote unless they can guess the number of marbles in a jar, I mean, that's not a very good argument. You could say that any restriction that restricts particularly poor people and or black people, which is often an overlapping category, unfortunately, you can say that if it tends to make it harder for those people to vote, like, for example, by having a stricter ID requirement on like absentee ballot, or, you know, by making it harder to harvest or collect ballots for multiple people and take them to the polling place because people don't have access to good transportation. Okay, I mean, you can make that argument. I think there's a hint of that. One of the examples brought up yesterday is in a neighborhood that's older people where, you know, volunteers basically will collect the ballots for those folks and take them in. And if this makes that harder because you're not allowed to do it for non-relatives or more than two people per election cycle or something like that, then there's a hint of an effort to suppress a certain demographic of voters. Okay, then there's a slippery slope argument, and that is if we do this, we're going to go right back to the jelly bean counting days or the marble counting days. And, you know, the idea of a slippery slope is that, you know, once you get going down the incline, that it's so there's no good way to check or stop or break the slide all the way to the bottom. Okay, and the problem with slippery slope arguments is the slope is almost never that slippery. And certainly, again, in this case, the idea that if we have this voting reform put in law, that next time around we're going to have black people counting marbles. I mean, come on. That's absurd. But that's the nature of the language that gets brought up a bunch yesterday. And she says, look, I'm in America. I should be able to vote however I want to vote.
I was born in America. I am an American citizen. And I will vote the way I want. And I should be able to vote when I want and let somebody else take in my ballot if I happen to be sick or out of town or anything that impedes my right to exercise my right to vote. No one should tell me who I allow my ballot to go to.
So the problem is in the premise. The premise of the argument is, I am a legitimate citizen wanting to cast my ballot, and I should be able to do that any way I want to do it. Okay, That's a starting point. What's the contrasting point? I also, as a citizen, have a general interest in the voting process itself only counting legitimate ballots. We all do, because to the degree that you allow any illegitimate ballots in, you taint, bias, disenfranchise, because one bad vote offsets one regular vote that's cast properly. And so, yes, generally speaking, I think what Republicans ought to say is, we'd like to do everything possible to make it so that any citizen who wants to vote should be able to vote. Yes. However, the practices that we use to make it easier also offer opportunities, weak links in the chain of custody, that make it easier for people to abuse that practice. And that's what we're trying to cut back on. Now, they kind of said that at one point. In fact, it was it Travis Hudson, I think, was the one who said it right. Maybe let me look and click quickly at my clips here, because it was, there was only really one person who said it right. But that was the general idea, is yes, we want to make it here. That was Joe Gruters. That's right here.
I think the goal for everybody is to make it as easy as possible to vote and as hard as possible to cheat. And when I hear my colleagues stand up and talk about restrictions and suppressing voters, and it's disappointing, because this does nothing to suppress the vote. It does nothing to restrict the vote. What we're trying to do is make sure that we preserve our sacred duty and right of having every vote count.
We want to make it as easy to vote as possible and as hard to cheat as possible. That should be the guiding principle, and he's right about that. So what is actually in this bill? And again, some of the distinctions between the House and the Senate mean that it's, at this point, I'm not sure if this is going to get through to go to the governor, because they've got till Friday. I mean, that's four business days to get this done, among other things. But in any case, you would only be able to use ballot drop boxes during the early voting hours, and they would have to be staffed by employees of the supervisor's office at the time. That means you could bring it in and drop it off. You can still put it in the mail, okay? It would make supervisors subject to a $25,000 fine if the boxes are available to voters after hours or unmanned. You have a little bit higher ID requirements for people requesting mail-in ballots, but they've gone away from the so-called wet signature. You have to, it's a little harder to change your party affiliation or to change your home address. You do have to ask for a new ballot every 2 years if you're going to do, you know, vote by mail or absentee, whatever you want to call it. That's because people change and move, and you want to make sure to keep that stuff up to date. I think you ought to have to request it every time. I don't understand the issue here. I don't know how you can tell the state that 4 years from now I need an absentee ballot. That just doesn't make any sense to me. So this one doesn't bother me in the least. You also have to provide a driver's license number, state ID number, or the last four digits, your Social Security number. If you don't have a Florida-issued ID card to make some of these changes, you can't give people food or water within 150 feet of a polling place. That's now become a fairly standard thing. That's to prevent solicitation or electioneering, as some people would call it. That's pretty much it. Okay. Oh, and, you know, it puts in place, one of the arguments that was made a lot yesterday is that Governor DeSantis said it was a great election. Why do we need to improve our rules? And the Republicans say, yeah, it was a great election because we followed his executive orders and we're putting those into law. And this is looking at some of the things that were done poorly in other states, and we're trying to make sure those don't happen here in the future. And there's truth to that as well. So here's the, if you want my, like, absolute end of the line takeaway, it's this. These reforms clearly benefit Republicans. The question is, and disadvantage Democrats in the sense of party power, the question is, does it do so by making sure that illegitimate votes don't get counted, therefore benefiting Republicans? Or does it do so by making sure that it's harder for legitimate, likely Democrat votes to be cast? That's the whole issue, right? I mean, nobody's really willing to say it that way, but the one thing they both agree about is that, you know, the Republicans believe that Democrats are guilty of various forms of voter influence or fraud. Democrats think Republicans are out to suppress the vote. They're both trying to, if you take them both at face value, they're both trying to do something that makes sense. The question is, which of these particular reforms will work, will be effective? And the one thing I will note is it's interesting for the Democrats to say they love the 2020 election because it was run so clean. But remember that the 2020 election had a lot of things in it every step of the way Democrats have opposed in the past. All kinds of election reforms were in place this time that they opposed putting in place. And so you wonder, do they have a good enough track record of understanding what it is that makes for a reliable election in order for them to complain about these reforms? 519 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Good morning, 521 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. It's dark out still, but oh my God, the moon is enormous. You see the moon at all last night, Davis? Beautiful last night.
Dude, I love a good moon.
I love
a good full moon.
And it's especially when it's like right up over the horizon. It's come up over the trees. It's the largest. It's the whoa, you know. And it's one of those things where I'm always inclined to take a picture. Pictures never work. They never turn out well. It's never good. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
A group known for ransomware attacks threatening to go after the FBI and Homeland Security, claiming responsibility for a hacking at a Washington, D.C. police computer server, now warning that more information could be leaked if its demands aren't met this week. Protesters in North Carolina back in the streets last night. Andrew Brown Jr. shot and killed last week in Elizabeth City when he allegedly tried to drive off as deputies were serving a search warrant. His family saw a snippet of that body cam video yesterday. They claim he was unarmed and had both hands on the wheel when he was shot multiple times.
I think it's super weird that they've got these rules about releasing the video and that they were able to show it to the family but not to the public.
Well, they showed 20 seconds.
Right, he says it's only like 30 seconds long, the whole encounter, so... Why only 20 seconds? I mean, it's all baffling to me. Nothing about this story adds up yet.
One of the oldest known bottles of whiskey hitting the auction block. Skinner auctioning off a bottle of Old Ingledew whiskey. Not one I'm familiar with. They believe it was produced.
You don't drink the Old Ingledew after a party?
Yeah.
For your nightcap?
It was produced sometime between 1762 and 1802 is when they believe that was produced. It's expected to go for about $40,000 when it goes up for grabs on June 22nd.
40-year span? They can't narrow it any better than that?
There's no label. There's nothing on the label. They don't know what?
Yeah, you don't taste it, I guess.
Yeah, so
you
can't.
You're not going to open it.
This is the worst whiskey ever to own, right? Because you'll never know. It could be anything in that bottle.
See, that's like
and you'll never be able to enjoy it. Or, I mean, maybe you just want to say you broke into a $40,000 bottle of whiskey, but nobody's ever going to drink it. So see, it's like you might as well own an NFT of the bottle of whiskey, like, because you're never going to actually enjoy it.
See, that's where, if I'm on my deathbed, then I'm like, all right, pour me a glass.
Pour me a glass of that.
And then
it's kind of gone off. Guess I should have bought a car instead.
Well, by the way, Andrew.
Yeah, go on.
The moon is the same size it always is.
You're funny. Then why does it look bigger sometimes, Mark?
Well, sometimes it's closer.
And?
Yeah.
The refractory power of the amount of atmosphere that it has to travel through in order to get
to
us.
All that visual stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. The moon is the same size as it always. How do you know, Mark?
Well, I hope it is.
See? You say that like, you know, obviously, but how do you know? Have you measured it? Okay. Mm-hmm. I rest my case.
Right. As well you should.
Yeah, exactly right. Oh, man. 524 on News Radio 90. How long till LeVar Burton? That's all I want to know. 524 on News. Because you think he's going to be the next host? You think he's going to be the permanent host?
I don't know.
We'll have to see how it turns out, obviously.
We'll have to see how it turns out.
We got like five or six people between here and there anyway, right?
That's right.
None of whom want the job. This is shaping up to be exactly what I said.
Yeah.
They're going to have a bunch of mediocre fill-ins, and then you bring on the guy at the end, and maybe you don't tell anybody you've brought him on. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, man, this guy's so good. Don't tell anybody.
And well, then also,
just
know,
let him be great, and then you hire him.
Part of it bothers me a little bit that he's been, you know, pushing himself. I want this job.
Well, would you rather have the reluctant host?
Well, no.
Well, I'll take it if they make me.
I just found it rather unseemly that within...
That he's so aggressively pushed for it,
like, within days after...
Seems un-Alex-like to you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough. 525 on News Radio, 92.3 and 8. Well, you know LeVar Burton's not Canadian. Canadians don't ask for anything and just wait and see if it turns out. I'm Andrew McKay.
I don't know about that one. I mean, we want to make that one happen. It's a little bit, the question is, it's got to go through more the TPO process. So it's going to have to filter to the point where on the TPO, it actually gets the funding for it.
So Mayor Robinson yesterday during his press conference, I asked him about, because he's starting to talk like a lame duck mayor a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit, because in this sense, he knows he's not running for re-election, and he's starting to think about, what can I get done, right? Now, not saying that he's not trying. I'm just saying he's starting to think about, well, I got a year and a half. What realistically can I expect to get done? And one of his sort of, I don't know, medium pushes, I would say, is he wanted to see Martin Luther King Drive and Davis Highway turned into two-way off the one-way that they are right now. Both of them converted to two-way. That would tend to make things safer, slower, less danger. And, you know, you used to need them as north-south conduits corridors because you didn't have I-110. Now you got I-110. Nah, you don't really need them to be the corridors that they are now. And so he's been talking about this for a while. Most of that would require paint. Most of it would require just painting, right? Restriping, basically. But up at the north end, where the roads come back together right around the on-ramp to 110 and Fairfield and all that area, it would need to be redesigned, probably. And the planned redesign is a roundabout. That's the, you know, hope for, fingers crossed, that's what they're trying to do. But that takes money. And that is where the Transportation Planning Organization, what he calls the TPO, I'm just telling you in case you don't know what the acronym is. The TPO comes in. That's all of the, like, Baldwin County, Escambia County, Santa Rosa County elected officials who get together and discuss transportation needs for this entire area. And I asked him the question, is that the hang-up, really, the roundabout?
Is that because of the roundabout, or is that the roads themselves?
I think it's a little bit of everything. So we'll see what happens in that process.
Yeah, I mean, so I would suspect at this point that's not going to happen unless the next mayor takes it up, because it doesn't seem likely the TPO is going to be funding that based on all the needs in our area. The other thing that's kind of interesting is, remember I went and I reported to you last week that the West Cervantes construction has begun on the pedestrian and the median fence and all of that. That's going to go all the way through to, where is it? And it's not, it's past, is it Pace? Or is it Go Pass? I can't remember where the end point is on the east side. But the mayor actually is like, ah, yeah, I see Andrew's how I learned about that.
The state is already beginning that. I follow on Facebook. I see Andrew's driven down there and said that the state's actually started working on Cervantes Street. So, it's their project. It's not our project. So we'll follow along and see where they are.
See, you should follow me on Facebook, too. We report a lot of stuff on Facebook, videos especially, of me driving around and seeing stuff. That's outside the city, by the way, so it's not like that's something that he's responsible to know. That's just kind of cool. 5:30 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, and this West Main project is just never ending. It's supposed to end, 2 weeks ago. We'll see.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. In a move that it says will help speed up its path to profitability, ride-sharing company Lyft announced that it has inked a deal to sell its self-driving vehicle unit, Level 5, to a unit of Toyota for about $550 million. In response, shares of Lyft were up 1.6% in after-hours trading. Stocks finished mixed overall in the regular Monday session, with both the NASDAQ Composite up 122 points and the S&P 500 notching fresh closing highs. Blue chips didn't fare as well, the Dow Industrial slipping 61 points. The fact that this year's Oscars set a new ratings low isn't a surprise, but just how few people watched is a bit of a stunner. Nielsen says the 93rd Academy Awards, televised by ABC last night, were watched by a mere 9.85 million with a dismal rating of 1.9 among the key 18 to 49 demographic. The audience number, a drop of some 58% from last year's total, which had also been a low. If you missed it, Nomadland took the trophy for Best Picture. That's Your Money Now. Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I'm on the line.
Good
morning, 537, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Chief Deputy, Shane Tucker. Chief, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. It's great to be with you again.
Hey, good to have you. Good to have you. Okay, I gotta, before we get into local events and things, I got a weird question to ask you.
Hit me with it.
Yeah. So, Florida has interesting pedestrian crosswalk laws, and my wife and I were having a bit of a disagreement yesterday while we were driving over into we're driving down Avalon. So we go east on I-10 and we go south on Avalon. And when you make the turn, it says continuous turn. And I think there is a green arrow there, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that it is. We'll pretend that there is. And there was a crosswalk. And so my wife said, you know, and I was like, well, that's weird. And she says, what? I said, well, there you have a crosswalk where the pedestrian is never going to have the right of way because you're always going to have the right of way as a car with a green arrow. And she says, I thought in Florida you always had to stop for a pedestrian. I'm like, not when you have a green light or a green arrow, and certainly not mid-block at a street. So my question for you is, when will the pedestrian ever have the right of way in that crosswalk, or maybe they won't ever?
You may have just stumped me, Andrew.
Nice.
Traffic is certainly not a forte of mine. Here's the way that I would roll with that until I get maybe somebody a little bit more educated than I on that. If there is a pedestrian, I would allow them to go. I would revert back to the pedestrians have the right of way, just as a matter of safety. If he was trying to cross, I have to wonder how much foot traffic is actually there.
Sure.
I don't know. I avoid that area like the plague. But
right, wisely so.
And that's, I would err on the side of caution and allow the pedestrian to go.
All right. Well,
I
can't disagree with the end result of that, because how else would a pedestrian ever safely be able to cross there when there is clearly a marked pedestrian? But I knew what I thought the law said, you know, being that you never don't have the right of way as a car on a green arrow, but you always have a green arrow. So anyway, I figured I'd ask the expert, and as you say, well, we found a little crevice, which is always
quite a
helpful.
Conundrum.
All right. So local stuff, anything happen over the weekend that we don't already know about?
You know, Saturday morning, we had one of our deputies, probably about 1:30 in the morning, was in East Milton responding to a complaint of an impaired driver. And as he was there waiting for the driver, he was off the side of the road. He's parked on the side of the road watching, and said drunk driver came by and struck the deputy's patrol vehicle, doing so much damage, hit him in the driver's door. The deputy actually had to get out the passenger side of the car. The drunk driver was able to make it about 500 feet and then crashed into a ditch. So the deputy crawled out his passenger side and went to help him.
Wow. And the deputy is okay? The driver's okay?
Both are okay. The FHP responded and did the DUI investigation and a crash investigation. Driver and suspect are both okay.
Good gravy. My goodness. I know this is a general question, but have you guys found anything really that works? Because my impression of drunk drivers is that people who drive drunk, they think they're okay. They think they're safe at it. They've gotten away with it in the past, and so they don't really think about it the way the rest of us do. Am I wrong? And have you figured out anything to solve it other than find them and take away their license and hope they obey that law?
You know, you're absolutely right. And it's been many years since I've been on the road actively enforcing DUIs, but I can remember even back then that a vast majority of the DUIs, even those with a significant BAC, felt like they were okay to drive at the time.
Yeah.
Alcohol, as you're probably well aware, does give you a false sense of security and a false sense of being in control, when in fact just the opposite is the case. You know, the only thing that we can do is just real strict and aggressive DUI enforcement, have people out there looking for them, and when we find them, to arrest them. I don't know that we're going to be able to do anything about the human nature and the effect that alcohol has on that. But what we can do is arrest every DUI driver that we can find.
Yeah, I mean, I of course I agree, and I'm just always looking for if there is a better answer to be had. I was curious if there might be one. You also had another weird story involving a car and a kid, and right? What happened here?
Oh, yeah. You know, our deputies responded to a report of a rolling disturbance. That's a disturbance that taking place between two vehicles as they're driving down the road. And the caller reported that one of the vehicles actually struck the other. When deputies responded and finally got the vehicle stopped on the side of the road, two of the subjects were physically fighting. They got on scene and took control. And as they did, they learned that the one vehicle was occupied by a man and his new girlfriend. The other was by the man's previous girlfriend and their three children. Apparently seeing her ex-fellow with another woman enraged her to the point that she struck the vehicle they were in and tried to block them in. So obviously she was charged with aggravated battery, battery and child endangerment, as well as reckless driving. But man, it's hard to wrap your mind around being so mad that you would put your children in that kind of position, over an ex-boyfriend.
Right. What happened to the kids? What happened to the kids?
I believe they were released to a relative.
That's what I think of immediately is, you know, they're obviously in a situation where somebody's not that stable to begin with. And then what's the better alternative for them? You know, if that's their norm. And I think about all these kids growing up in situations like that. And oh, my God. Wow. Okay.
That's a tough spot.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, we talk about this periodically, but you guys run up against a lot of things that, you know, you do your part at the moment to do what the law requires. But living with the knowledge that there are such bigger issues ongoing that you just don't have the capacity to solve, right? I mean, that's something your officers deal with all the time, right?
You know, you're absolutely right. And both of the things that we talked about this morning, the DUI and the disturbance, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That really highlights the fact that what we're seeing out here at our level, we're seeing the end result. But the end result is of a larger and deeper problem. It's not something that we're going to solve, certainly not at the sheriff's office level. We can respond to crimes and deal with them, but the reason they're happening is very rarely something that we're going to be able to address.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I know that's frustrating as a police officer to see that, or a sheriff deputy to see that, but, you know, as you say, they're much bigger problems with much more complicated both causes and solutions than you're able to do in a, let's say, a traffic stop or a call out or something like that. Well, Shane Tucker, he is a chief deputy at the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office. Chief, thank you so much for the time this morning. As always, thanks for what your officers do. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. 646, 545 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
They have a calendar that's just part one of their bridges where the water drains off of it during a rain. The columns look like waterfalls. I mean, their total ability to build a bridge that has significant architectural value and aesthetics is outstanding. And that's what we need. Quite frankly, the McDonald's arch over Escambia Bay on the 3-mile bridge doesn't impress me a bit. When you look at something like in Tampa Bay where they got the big mast and the columns. And you look at it for downtown Pensacola and the proportionate size of that arch compared to the rest of the bridge, they could just take it off there for all I'm concerned, you know. But
it's kind of funny. I think it was Dave Peach, commission chairman, in the background said, call it the toenail. the arch on the hump, you know, for the Pensacola Bay Bridge, the replacement bridge, Three Mile Bridge. That's Bob Cole at the Santa Rosa County Commission meeting talking about the need for a beautiful bridge, something interesting and different, distinctive for the Navarre Beach Causeway that they're talking about having to rebuild, which they do. It has to be rebuilt in the next 8 to 10 years, basically, is kind of the time frame that we're looking at. But it is funny, decorative arching for the Pensacola Bay bridges or the Three Mile bridges is not all that exciting, but is better than nothing. Okay, and there were some people that worked pretty hard to get even that, and of course with the lighting, it's very cool. James Calkins weighed in.
If we gonna build a bridge, we need to build a nice bridge. I mean, a real nice bridge. And I love, you know, I went to Tampa myself and I saw those arches and and lights. I mean, just adding lights to the bridge, you know, beautiful lights. Regular bridge, you add lights, and it could really make a good look. And
we need lights. Nice bridge. James Calkins. Agree, which I think so, too. I think the bridge ought to be. If you can do a bridge that's functional and cool-looking, amen. Do it.
I used to take, and that bridge they're talking about is the Skyway Bridge. Mm-hmm. I used to take that bridge every day for school, at least Monday through Friday. And it's a beautiful bridge, but that's a huge, huge bridge. And those kinds of arches only really work on a big bridge. So, I mean, how big are we talking? How bright are these lights? So, I'm sorry, I had to take my shot. But
how bright are these lights?
I mean, it's the Navarre Beach Causeway. It's not exactly, it's not an enormous span.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't know.
But then again, you can do it you could do some stuff. So, yeah, you're not going to put up a big suspension towers or anything like that. But I'm curious to see what comes back. We're at the very early phases now. This is just putting it out to look at the scope of the possibilities. That's all they're doing right now. And they haven't even voted on it. I mean, I think they might even have it on the agenda for today. 550 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
And the lights are bright in here, too. That's never mind. The Justice. I'm sorry.
Go on.
The Justice Department will investigate the police department in Louisville, Kentucky. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the probe will look into whether unreasonable force is used there. Probe comes more than a year after the death of Breonna Taylor, who died after a police raid on her apartment. West Virginia paying people to get protected against coronavirus. Anyone between 16 and 35 will get a $100 savings bond after getting vaccinated. The state using funds from the federal COVID-19 stimulus package for that program.
Oh, man, I didn't hold out long enough. Dang it. Dang it. There I was trying to save my life and stuff, and I wasn't holding out for the vaccine bond.
The vaccine bond, yes. That's
$100.
$100. When do those mature? How many years?
I have a 20-year-old savings bond that is finally profitable.
No, is it a bond? It's not even a check?
Yeah, it's $100 savings bond.
Oh, this is like 25 years from now.
Yeah.
When we don't even use money anymore.
Speaking of not using money anymore.
Show me the money!
Or perhaps the digital currency. If Sean Culkin makes the Kansas City Chiefs roster this season, he says he's going to convert his $920,000 base salary to Bitcoin. The former Mizzou tight end vying to back up Travis Kelce for the AFC champion Chiefs.
Yeah, look, there's a part of me that thinks I should know more about this so that I could get involved and make my billions. Okay. And there's another part of me that's like, come on, man.
Yeah. And this isn't new now. Like, there's another football player who, by the way,
there's loads of digital currency, cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Dogecoin. Let's jump on that. That took off last week.
What coin?
Dogecoin.
Oh, yeah. I think I've got some in my pocket.
Well,
yeah.
And then, I mean, we've talked a couple of times, sort of in passing, about the NFT fad that's going on right now. And, I just
don't understand any of it.
Now what is interesting, I will say this, in defense of the fine folk of 1740, you know, there was a time in history when people, their attitude towards paper currency was fairly similar to our attitude towards cryptocurrency. That doesn't even have any value.
It's just a piece of paper.
I mean, like, paper currency is really just thanks for working. Hope somebody else takes this thanks for working symbol. It doesn't have any value. You know, you can't do anything with it. Which, of course, even gold is, what's the practical value of gold? It's just precious because it's rare. But, you know, at every stage, somebody thinks that nobody's going to take a rock for labor. You know, but then somebody does, and that's the basis of some future currency economy. Mark, thanks so much for the update. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. What else do we have going on here? The Supreme Court is taking up a couple of very interesting cases. The first one, this has gotten a fair bit of news coverage in the last day. Supreme Court is going to take up a case on whether you have a constitutional right to carry a firearm outside of your home. Remember the Heller case, was it a decade ago? Something like that. The Heller case established that you have a right to have a gun in your home. And now the question is going to be, do the New York laws that make it so you have to give cause and it's often denied why you should be given a carry permit? And the case is going to be, well, is that unconstitutional? Does that violate your constitutional right? It's very interesting because, again, the Second Amendment says what? The security, oh my God, I know it by heart. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. To keep and bear is a key element there. And by the way, you know, sometimes people say, well, does this allow you to have like a tank? You know, I think it was Justice Thomas, if I remember correctly, one time made the observation, you know, to keep and bear, it applies to bearable arms, right? It does not apply to tanks. You cannot carry a tank, so it does not apply to a tank, which is, you know, reading the text for what the text would have meant. So what this will mean when you've got a conservative leaning court, you know, a lot of people count it 6-3 or at least 5-4. Will they actually say that everybody everywhere has to be allowed a reasonable opportunity to get a concealed carry permit? You know, I mean, they're probably not going to come out and say that you have to be allowed to carry openly by law, by the Constitution. But who knows? They could make a very narrow ruling. I do not expect them to limit gun rights. I would expect them to expand gun rights, at least somewhat. I think any court watcher would expect them to do something along those lines. But I will say this also, you always have to go through the process. You have to hear the facts of the case. You have to hear the arguments, and the justices go through their process of arguing, debating, thinking about the merits, and then they come to a conclusion. Supreme Court is, you know, if they are real justices, then you can't know in advance for sure what their outcome is going to be. You can guess, but sometimes you get that guess wrong. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Somebody texted me in based on my conversation with Shane Tucker from the Center for the Sheriff's Office, says, because I was asking him that question about what I think is a genuine, it's not actually, I think, a genuine dilemma. It's just a weird situation when you've got that continuous right turn going east off of I-10, you get down onto Avalon and it says, go right, don't stop, you know, and I think there's a green arrow there. Somebody text me if I'm wrong, but I think there's actually the green arrow is telling you, go, 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 go. And there's a pedestrian crosswalk there. Now, the law in Florida says that if you have the green light as an automobile, you have the right of way. You are not obligated to stop for a pedestrian, even in a crosswalk, because they don't have the right of way if you've got the green light. That's one of the problems is, you know, you cross at a signalized intersection, like, I don't know, Brenton 9th or something. If you cross in a pedestrian crosswalk against the green lighted traffic, you're in the wrong. If you get hit, it's your fault. Same thing if you cross in a mid-block. It's your fault. You're obstructing traffic at that point. Now, what I'm teaching my son who's learning how to drive is avoid the crash, right? Always protect life, avoid the crash, right? You know, do what's necessary. It's better to keep somebody alive than it is to be right under the law. Okay. Oh, and somebody texted me and yes, there's a green arrow. And so, so I think in that situation, legally, you are allowed to just go, go, go. Morally, you should probably stop if there's a pedestrian there because they will never have a chance to cross, not safely, which is weird. But somebody texts me and says, Andrew, if you're driving south on Palafox downtown, south of Garden Street, and a pedestrian walks across, this is in the business district there, somebody walks across the street right in front of you, not in one of the crosswalks, doesn't the auto have the right of way and not the pedestrian? Yes. Yeah, they do. It happens more and more often lately. And what people stop, okay? But yeah, the pedestrians only have the right of way if they're in a crosswalk, or if they're in, and that's at a, not at a light, or if they're in a lighted crosswalk where you have a red light, which of course you're supposed to stop anyway. So it's kind of one of those interesting ones. 5:59 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm Andrew McKay.